Sup? Welcome, Beefs. August 1st, 2020. I think I'm almost over the COVID. I don't think there's enough for me to say for another COVID dire. So real quick, I'm just tired a lot. And it kind of, my lungs hurt. Feels like I smoke cigarettes. That's that. I think I'm going to buy some gold. I've been meaning to for a long time. I wanted to go buy physical gold. The only person I know that has any is my father-in-law, who, because of the divorce thing, not exactly the guy I can pick up the phone and call. So I've been trying to get the whiff to ask him, and for some reason she just didn't. For basically since about April. There's some point in April I went, I'm gonna buy some Bitcoin. That's easy. I'm gonna buy some Bitcoins. And then I'm thinking maybe I should buy some gold. Whoa. What? What are you talking about, bro? What is that? Okay. So I got a degree in economics from University of Maryland, which is a, you know, it's a second tier, not a first tier school like Harvard or Georgetown or Duke, but it's second tier. It's like, it's a good flagship state school. I went because it was cheap. I don't think I could have gotten in any better school anyway. Just on my, I mean, with football, I would have. But whatever. Right. So, and then I went to Temple, got an MBA in finance. And so I have a general, very basic understanding of economics and exchange rates and all that. You're like, wait a minute, you have a degree in this and you got a like MBA in finance. Shouldn't you have it? No, I never worked in the industry. I worked as a management consultant. Basically, my whole career as a business person from 2014 through 2018 or so was management consultant pretty much the whole time. At a large business and a small business. And so I never really got into the weeds of, I mean, I know how finance works as far as like discounting money and all that, but as far as finding arbitrages and exchange rates, that's what I'm going to talk about. But I have some expertise. So when I read, basically it makes it so when I read an article about foreign exchange, stocks, any finance stuff, I have a little bit more understanding than if you're doing it. But that's it. It's not like I'm some massive expert here. You know, my dad was always like, what should I do with my money? And I'm like, you know better than me, actually. I had conversations with one of my brother-in-laws who thought that, you know, my wife's father is not being smart with his money. I'm like, first of all, he's got 30 million. You got 30,000. Actually, I take it back. You lost. You're at negative money. You are just like everybody else here. You're actually, that particular brother-in-law has money because his wife is a PA and she comes from private jet money, but whatever. The other, my one brother-in-law makes decent money, paints cars, and the other one gets money from his rich parents and his wife gets money from her rich parents. Just my situation's the same. I'm not making fun, but as far as anyone with money goes, my father and this guy are the guys to listen to because they knew what they were doing. I mean, okay, they did it in the easiest time to do that. Oh, yeah. But to some defense of them, a lot of the money they made came in the 90s when that sort of was ending. And, you know, they only retired. My father-in-law retired 2 years ago, and my father retired in 2008. His real clever rich way, get to really one of his main ways that he got very wealthy was he just lived. Like, he, because he managed to get himself a bunch of pensions, and then he lived for at least 12 years, you know, he gets like 50K from one, he gets like 20 from another, gets like 10 from another, or whatever it is like that. He's got like a few of them. He sort of outsmarted the system because they're expecting you to retire and die in maybe 5 years, right? So the average lifespan of a white male in the United States is like 74. So if you retire at 72 like he did, it's like, it's 2 years, give him whatever he wants. And then they sort of get stuck to it because it's linked to unions and lawsuits, and so you're better off paying, let me put it that way, especially because they expect you to die at any moment. So even now, if they went, okay, he's 86, he's been getting money, free money for 12 years, maybe we need to put in, by the way, you can't get that anymore, the union money that he's getting and everything else, well, because of unions. I don't think he actually was in a union. But that's gone. If you're in your 20s listening, it's going, oh, yeah, how do I do that? The answer is you don't in today's world. Now, the world changes. When someone in the 1960s got a job, the company expected, they were like, okay, they trained you. They did all, that's changed, right? And this actually does tie into what I'm talking about. Normally when I rant and rave and I get off topic, this is actually part of what's going on here. What happened for some reason, and I'm not entirely sure why, in the late 70s, early 80s, the culture of business changed from one of basically sort of would be described as like gentleman rules, meaning they didn't do hostile takeovers, they didn't attack cash cows. Whenever there was a merger or acquisition, it was almost always a deal. It was never a court battle. But then Mitt Romney shows up. Why do I say Mitt Romney? Because he's one of the like innovators of this. Shows up at Bain Capital. They start buying up companies. They borrow money. Now, this is crazy. They borrow money against the assets of the target. I go to a bank and I say, man, I need $100 million to buy this company. Okay, what's your collateral? The company I'm buying. And the bankers went, okay, all right, that makes sense. It might actually make sense. The thing is, it's like, some of these things just mathematically make sense. And when you're talking to mathematicians, and then that whole thing happens, and then it changes the nature of the Federal Reserve, and you go off the gold standard, and you go to a pure fiat money, which is, by the way, private money. It's says U.S. Treasury on it, but it's a Federal Reserve note. The Federal Reserve is like private with some, it's an entity that has some private and some public. It's got its feet in both waters. That's why when you read about right-wing people getting shut off the internet, it's like, okay, YouTube's decided it doesn't want you on there. Whatever, no big deal. But when you start hearing like a payment processor like Visa, banks are, every bank is semi-public. Now, there are private banks, which may not be part of the Federal Reserve, I'm not sure. But they shouldn't be allowed. A bank refusing you service would be like you walking into the DMV and then be like, we don't like your politics. We're not giving you a driver's license. Anyway, but why buy gold? What's that got to do with buying gold? Well, here it is. For a long time, especially if you're like, I don't know, 35 or older, you'll remember a time where there was a big hubbub done, always worried about this deficit. We got this big deficit. Oh no, what are we going to do? We need to like curtail our spending because of the deficit. And then all of a sudden in 2008, it was like, we need to triple it today, overnight, because if we don't, our banking system is going to collapse. And if the banking system collapses, then there's not going to be food deliveries and people are going to literally starve. Is that a bunch of BS by bankers to get money? 10%? There's a historical record of this. It's called the Great Depression. Banks failed. The Federal Reserve basically was like, eh. And farmers started dumping crops. Because I'm not giving away the stuff I made for free. I'd rather burn it. Actually, more to the point, dumping milk. It was coincided with a weather event that caused a lot of farmers to go out of business. But still, everything sort of shut down. Now, is that because the banking system, and that includes like stock market, Goldman Sachs, insurance companies or banks. Just take my word for it, okay? I got a degree in economics. You may not think of an insurance company as a bank, but it functions a lot like a bank in theoretical and practical terms, okay? Bank isn't just a place where you go to get checks. That's one kind of bank. There are many kinds of banks. For instance, here, real easy, cars. Ferrari's a car. So's a Jeep Cherokee. Function very differently, have different uses. Get it? Got it? Good. So we got this huge, so now we can't talk about the deficit because it's going to make the people in power look real bad. But also, I think John Maynard Keynes is correct. I didn't used to, but I'm starting to think he is, at least to a point, because this massive deficit is supposed to create massive inflation, and it kind of is and kind of isn't. Housing prices, you know, fluctuate up and down. Food prices consistently go up. But as we've seen, gas prices went way down. Here's a little aside, because that brought it up, brings up a point. Brings up the petrodollar. What's a petrodollar? A petrodollar is that the largest producer of oil in the world at the last, well, they may not be the largest, but they're major producers in the world. only take U.S. dollars to buy the gold. Now, I only am 100% sure that the U.S. does this and Saudi Arabia does. But if you're buying Saudi oil, this might actually extend to, I mean, not all OPEC countries, because Russia's in OPEC and Venezuela's in OPEC. But, and okay, real quick on Venezuela. That's a country that got taken over by somebody, and now they're just pilfering it. Yay, socialism. Socialism equals a really, really small aristocracy taking everything. That's what it means. No free stuff for you, lazy bones. Anyway, moving on to OPEC. So they'll only take Saudi for sure, maybe a couple of other OPEC countries, only take dollars. So if you want anything coming out of Saudi Arabia, you need to pay in dollars. What does that mean? Okay, why is that a big deal? Because if you don't have dollars, you need to get dollars. On a micro level, you've done this at the airport. You go to the exchange. You exchange your dollars for francs. Well, not francs. That's a stupid thing to say. Yen or renminbi or yuan, whatever the hell they call their Chinese. I don't know. Is it yuan? Is it renminbi? I probably should know that, but whatever. And then so you can have cash in that country or use your credit card. They do it for you. Using a credit card, debit card, you actually get better exchange rates because those credit card companies are doing it in mass. And think Costco, same. Anyway, you're buying euro or pounds. They call it exchange, but it means the same thing. So if you're, let's say, a Chinese company and you want to sell, you want some Saudi oil to, I don't know, do whatever it is you do with oil. You go to Saudi Arabia like, hey man, we want, 100 billion barrels, whatever the hell. And Saudi goes, sweet man, we love selling oil. That's going to be 100 billion barrels is going to be $500 billion. You're like, okay, $500 billion. And I'm making numbers up, don't matter. You're like, okay, well, the exchange rate says that $500 billion are like 5 trillion yen. So here's 5 trillion yuan. And Saudi goes, no. We don't want $500 billion equivalency. We want the dollars. How about gold? I said dollars. We could pay you in uranium. This isn't barter. Dollars. Like Washington's face on the dollar bill dollars. That's one of the reasons we defend them, because it props up our currency. It's the world. It's just one of the reasons it's the world's reserve currency, including other reasons are nuclear weapons. We can defend ourselves to the point where we obliterate the world. Military might. Now, military might used to mean like Soviet Union was able to repel the Nazis, right? But it doesn't mean that anymore, because that's a stupid war. If, I read all the time about these conventional warfare machinations of Russia and the U.S., and I'm like, what are you talking about? If you, let's say you're Russia and you go, you know what, we've had it with NATO and the U.S., you just go blasting into Europe, and you roll over the small amount of Americans still there, and Polish and German militaries and Denmark, and all the NATO armies go full blast against you, and you smash them to bits. And there you are in Western Poland, like just salivating, kind of like the way the Nazis were, like they could see Moscow in the distance. Just to be fair, some people are like, oh, if you ignored Stalingrad, you could have taken Moscow. Napoleon took Moscow. All right. Didn't seem to help. So anyway, and then the U.S. goes, no, lights out. Nuclear response. By the way, there's new intermediate nuclear missiles in Germany. Britain has a nuclear weapon deterrent, and so does France. So let's say the U.S. goes, you know what? We're not going to defend Europe with nuclear weapons. We're not willing to do that. That's too much. And then the Soviets, Russian Federation marches west, and France goes, oh, yeah, you can have Germany, but you got to stop. And they're like, no. We're going to Portugal and beyond. And France just goes, no, and launches. Now, the Russian response is going to obliterate France. But you get the idea here. Israel is reputed to have nuclear weapons. I wouldn't be surprised either way. But that's something that props up your dollar, because at the end of the day, there's this... Imagine you wanted to... think of it as like a mobster. These are mobsters that have tanks. On that scale, that's what that is. Like, imagine the street mobster with armored cars, tanks, and helicopters. When that guy says, like, look, I'm going to pay you back, Or you're using his, you're like, hey, man, I'm going to loan Jimmy some money. And the mobster says, okay, you can do that, and I'll make sure Jimmy pays you back. You have a pretty strong confidence that Jimmy's going to pay you back. IMF, World Bank, both trade on U.S. and NATO power, right? Because you have some country in Africa that's borrows all this money, and suddenly it's like, oh, no, that was a bad idea. But they have to keep paying, because if they don't, then, you know, CNN and Fox News will start talking about their civil rights violations, and then we have to invade. And they know that, right? You know, it's funny because Omar Gaddafi tried, there was some Arab conference, and he was trying to tell them after the invasion of Iraq, like, the U.S. is coming for all of us. And they laughed. Like, YouTube it. It's hilarious. He's like, the U.S. and the Jewish conspiracy of Zog and blah, 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 blah is going to come for you. And they're all laughing at him. This is like 2 years later. He's gone. Syria's in some civil war basically created by the U.S., I think. I don't know. There's a lot of things going on there. It's not very simple. But it happened the way what he said at least happened on face value, right? Without having to delve into the weeds of, like, well, exactly what did happen in Tunisia and Egypt. Egypt's the funniest to me because Egypt has this big revolution and the army goes, okay, you can have your democracy. Then they have democracy and they go, no, you're too stupid. We're taking it back. The military's like, no, no, no. We're not. I think it's because the military realized that Muslim Brotherhood is probably going to try to pick a fight with Israel, and they didn't want to die because they'd lose to Israel. Okay, so nuclear weapons and conventional military. The conventional military is there. My point, all that blobber, was that the conventional military is really there to project power against small opponents. Like, I don't know, Afghanistan, Iraq. Now, how effective they are at it, I think, from what I've seen, not total loss, but not great. I think, you know, after 20 years, Taliban's still there and about to take over. So, sounds like an L to me, but whatevs. The only military blame to be laid here is at the feet of some of the generals. There's some battles where you can say that the rank and file failed. The tactics failed. The junior officers and NCOs failed. Colonels at the operational level failed. In this case, I think it's primarily strategic, much like Vietnam. All the battles were won. They didn't lose. You didn't lose Khe Sanh. They didn't. The Battle of Way City is an American victory. You won all the battles and you lost the war. That is a political problem. And I would even throw very little of it at the feet of the generals, because they're limited by what the politicians want. They have to do what they're told or they'll be removed. So, you know, when you're given a set of parameters and you can't, and maybe they were told, like, hey, fight to a tie, make sure we have the minimum amount of casualties. That's when I was in Iraq in 2007, 100% to me, what was happening was, we are minimizing U.S. casualties. When we can do something at minimal risk, we'll do it. If it requires high risk, we are not going to do it. And we also want to minimize, the amount of damage done to neutral and friendly civilians, makes sense, and minimize casualties. Now, that makes sense, but when it's your primary goal, it's like playing a sport. Well, no, not even. I don't know. I don't have a metaphor. Let's just move on. Take it at face value. So anyway, okay, so you get the idea there. Why buy gold? Well, we have this huge deficit, and it's fine. The economy is really chugging along. A lot of the quantitative easing and low interest rates are really designed to keep rich people rich. But I've said this 100 times. Yeah, Jeff Bezos made $16 billion in one day, which is just the value of his stock went up. But in reality, they're not the only beneficiaries of the stock market. You have to understand there's all kinds of institutional investors that pay out pensions to cops, that pay out pensions to state workers, that pay out pensions to your mom, your dad. They are cities require the stock market to sell their crappy municipal bonds. The entire, it is, as a system, yes, the rich get the lion's share. However, it's propping everything up. It's like college football. The Federal Reserve System is like the college football of at least America, if not the entirety of the Western Empire, and possibly even affects non, you know, whatever. And so, if it, so in a way, if the stock market drops too much, then there's going to be massive problems that you're not thinking of and that I've never seen talked about on TV. Not even like on the financial stuff I read. They focus a lot because these financial people, they're very much don't care about blue arrows because they're uninteresting on a day-to-day practical sense. So they focus on details. In any case, why buy gold? Well, because they've essentially, every time you print a dollar, and the way they do it in a way that's not as bad. So in Weimar Republic, we're always comparing ourselves to the fall of the Roman Empire, the Weimar Republic. Well, in the Weimar Republic, the German government just literally printed the money. And what we do is slightly different. We loan the money out. The problem is a lot of these loans and a lot of this quantitative easing is being taken advantage of by, say, you know, you give these companies loans to get them through tough times. And what they do is they buy back their own stocks and the executives in charge are selling them because they see what's happening. They know what's happening. And they're like, we're going to just enrich ourselves as much as we can before we get out. And that makes sense. All right. Think about it. You do it. But sooner or later, it's going to inflate. And that $5 you have in the bank is going to be worth, I don't know, $4.50. And then it's going to be worth $4.25. And then it's going to be worth $4.15. And then it's going to be worth $2. And then it's going to be worth $1. And then it's going to be worth 50 cents. I bought Bitcoin. And I'm going to purchase some gold and silver to protect myself. Not huge. Like, still going to be a small part of my portfolio. But some. And the sum I'm going to take isn't going to be paper money. I'm going to have, like, gold in my house. Now, the federal government has in the past come in and said, hey, you got gold. And I think they bought it for $23 an ounce. That's crazy. It's $2,000 an ounce now. Anyway, this is the Great Depression. In the Great Depression, they said, we're taking all gold that's not jewelry. All right, cool. Part one. Tune in next time for part two.